I know teams have talked about it at the GM meetings and the owners meetings. One team for sure is St. Louis Cardinals. They need a big power bat. They would like another arm. And, Zach can reject trades of 15 teams. I don't think St. Louis would be on there. I think he would actually, love pitching in a city like St. Louis, where it's all baseball, yes. All positive, everything.
USA Today baseball writer Bob Nightingale on with Doug and Wolf this morning here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station on the possibility not only Zach Greinke being shopped, which has been widely reported all throughout this offseason, young as it is, but also the possibility of Paul Goldschmidt being part of a package.
Well, that's the part of his reporting that really kind of struck me. Two things. He mentioned that the Diamondbacks aren't even bothering to hide the fact that they're trading Zach Greinke, which tells me they're flooding the market with news that, hey, you want a pitcher? We got one for you. Big fan of the Ephus pitch? We got your guy right here. I do believe there'll be interest for Zach Greinke, and I do believe that it would come with having to swallow a lot of money again, and I don't know if this regime is into that. I wonder if they see a better alternative in that latter part of what Bob Nightingale was saying, and that is packaging these two guys together, meaning you take that really overpaid guy, and we'll give you this really underpaid guy, and we'll call it even. And then you give us this package of resources back. The package won't be what it would have been just for Paul Goldschmidt alone, because you're taking an overvalued pitcher. So that's the way we're going to do it. So the Diamondbacks would settle for maybe a lesser-looking quantity of player, yet gain the financial flexibility of not having to swallow any of Zach Greinke's money, and then they use their own acumen to spend the money the way they want.
Okay, on that front, though, the possibility still exists. You get a shopper, you get an interested party in Zach Greinke, you might have to pick up some of that contract. That was one of the questions that Bob Nightingale was asked this morning by Doug and Wolf. How much would the Diamondbacks be willing to shell out to just get out from under that contract?
He's got what, 34.5 million a year left in that contract for three more years. I would think they'd have to pay down at least $10 million a year off that, so $30 million. He's still a very good pitcher, as you know. Still had a fine season. Takes the ball every 5 days, so you can still argue he's a $20 million pitcher, but just not a $34 million pitcher.
Yeah, and that was the talk 3 years ago when the Diamondbacks signed Zach Greinke to that deal. It was wow, they got the top pitcher in the market. And they really overpaid for him, and they outbid.
And we were so happy that they did
a couple of teams in their own division. The 3 year experiment of Zach Greinke in Arizona, in my opinion, has been largely positive. I said it earlier this season when things were still going well that I don't believe Zach Greinke was appreciated the way that he should be. And maybe it's because of that salary. He's kind of a rock. And I mean that in a good way. You know what you're going to get from Zach Greinke.
Yep.
And he's lived up to what was advertised. My fear is if he goes to another team, I was thinking about this. The year before he got to Arizona, Bick, he was unhittable. In Los Angeles.
He was.
Going out every 5 days for the most part in a really pitcher-friendly ballpark. He had an ERA under 1.7. I think he's still got that capability in the right scenario. If he lands with the right team in the right setting and the right pitching atmosphere, I think he still has that capability.
Okay.
And that would suck, wouldn't it?
Well, of course it would.
Especially if you're paying up to $10 million a year, as Bob Nightingale suggested, just to have him go away.
Yeah. No, I'm completely down with that, and that would stink, but it would also symbolize that, okay, let's do this right. Let's shed ourselves of albatross contracts. Let's not deal with the dilemma of having to give another one to Paul Goldschmidt after getting rid of one in Zach Greinke, and let's just move forward. I'm intrigued by this dual suitor package deal for these guys, but I just don't know where that would work. I was told about 2 weeks ago that Atlanta would be a team that would take Zach Greinke. Now, you would have to take salary from them, but they've got money to spend, and Zach Greinke fits their lineage, right?
Yes.
Smart pitchers, intelligent, think their way through games.
I mean, Greg Maddux had his best years there. There's a lot of parallels you can draw between Greg Maddux and Zach Greinke in the pitching style.
Without a
doubt. So if the possibility exists to package both of those stars together, what could the Hall look like coming back? Doug and Wolf asked Bob Nightingale that question as well.
Well, in the case of Goldschmidt, I don't believe you get four prime prospects.
Okay.
You only have 1 year left in the contract.
Okay.
I could see one prime prospect. You know, maybe the second guy being some guy's, you know, some team's 15th best prospect, like that. Then a couple others. But
okay.
The fact you can only control them. You know, unless the Diamondbacks allow permission and said you got 72 hours to negotiate a deal, I don't think they would do that because I think it can, you know, hurt his value.
Okay.
You know, if he's looking for a lot more money than teams are willing to spend. And Greinke, then you're only talking about some fringe prospects, really, because you're trading him, really, just to get rid of the contract.
Yeah. I mean, that answer doesn't excite you that much, does it?
No, it doesn't, but I think that's probably fairly accurate.
It probably is. I mean,
but then you take that money, which would basically be $10 to $14 million a year that you might have to swallow to trade Zach Greinke independently, and then you use that money to buy players, for lack of a better word, and then maybe stock your shelves that way. I'm sure they're thinking of a lot of different scenarios over there, but the fact of the matter remains, it's almost like this decision to trade Paul Goldschmidt has been made, and nobody's going to come out and say it. But I just feel like we all kind of know that it's the right move, even if we don't like the sound of it emotionally. Are you kind of there?
Yes.
Yeah. And so am I. And I say it with all due respect because he's a great guy, a phenomenal person, great ambassador to the team. You know what I mean? Paul Goldschmidt is never going to embarrass you.
One of the best players in the game.
Yeah.
Let's be honest about
it. Yeah, that's right.
Would this be the first Arizona star that's ever been traded in their prime?
No.
Charles Barkley probably still fits that. He wasn't in his prime, but still.
Right, that's what I'm saying, in his prime, because Nash has already passed
Jason
his prime.
Jason Kidd.
Oh, yeah.
Extenuating circumstances, though, with him, so that's a hard one.
You didn't say that.
That's true. But, like, by the time other, you know, beloved stars left town, like Nash or Luis Gonzalez or whatever, they were past their prime, or Barkley even was a little past their prime. That's the only thing that might be kind of hard to sell.
I guess you could make an argument for Randy Johnson after the after the 04 season.
Or did they trade him?
They traded him. They got
Brad Halsey. Yeah, I don't know, man. The last thing I want is another rebuilding project in Phoenix. We've talked about this. But at the same time, part of me wants to see Mike Hazen fly with a plan.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? With a plan. Not with a, what can we piece together to stay in contention?
Look, I know you're very bullish on Mike Hazen, and there's not much reason not to be. So that prospect is exciting. Yeah. Are you looking at a future that doesn't have Paul Goldschmidt and Zach Greinke? Yeah,
and Patrick Corbin and AJ Pollock.
Yeah, and we'll get into those guys in a second. But the prospect of an architect, the quality of Mike Hazen, that's got to, if you're a baseball fan and a fan of roster construction, that's got to excite you a little bit.
Well, it has to.
Yeah,
because when you look at the pedigree, you look what he's done, you look at what it takes to win a World Series, and it's really hard to piecemeal your way to something the way the Diamondbacks have.
Uh-huh.
You can piecemeal your way to a playoff berth, but you're not getting much further than that. And it's time. Well, it's just time.
What do you read into Jeff Mathis signing a 2-year deal with the Rangers? Zach Greinke's personal catcher for 2 years here.
It tells me that there's not going to be a need for a guy who specializes in rounding out pitching staffs so you can win now.
Mm-hmm.
Calling great games, framing pitches, personal valet to the stars. You don't need that guy. It looks like there's going to be some heavy-duty development going on at a lot of different positions. You know, Jeff Mathis is one of those guys whose value is hard to understand unless you talk to a pitching staff, and his value is to a team that's going to be good or wants to be good. That's what I read into it.
2 years ago, when the Diamondbacks made that playoff run, Jeff Mathis and Chris Iannetta and those guys and even Chris Herrmann, they didn't put up huge numbers. They all played a role. And I said it in real time, and I still believe this, that that was one of the key aspects of that team being successful in 2017. Jeff Mathis was the only holdover from that group last year. This is a big loss for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
Even if Zach Greinke's not here, because of what you said, his ability to handle a pitching staff, kind of ease everything, a real professional pitch caller, good defensive guy, anything you get offensively is gravy, and it's not a lot of gravy. I mean, those potatoes are still going to be pretty dry if you're looking for gravy offensively from Jeff Mathis. But this is a pretty big loss for this organization.
Yes, I would agree with that, because I think that the pitching staff the Diamondbacks have had the last couple of years, they've outperformed who they are, mm-hmm. in my opinion, from Clay Buchholz all the way down. So this will leave an impact on them. It's just, I think they've come to the realization that Patrick Corbin is no interest in taking a short-term affordable deal. Yeah. I don't think anybody ever thought that was going to happen.
No, I didn't think so
either.
And
AJ Pollock, the injury history, as much as you love him, it's just time. It's time to start this thing over from scratch.
Yeah, Bob Nightingale shared thoughts on both of those free agents. Here's first what he said about what he's hearing on the Patrick Corbin market.
I mean, you hear mostly with him, either the Yankees or the Phillies. Obviously, you grew up a Yankee fan in Syracuse, generations of Yankee fans of the family. Philadelphia's got a ton of money. I think he's going to get the most money by any free agent pitcher. I think you're going to look at a 5 years in excess of $100 million for Corbin.
Here's what he said on A.J. Pollock.
You know, a lot less. Teams are kicking the tires. You know, teams like Cincinnati Reds are looking into it. You know, what's hurt him, of course, is just all the injuries.
Yes.
And, you know, when he's healthy, you know, fine center fielder, you know, to my little pop in the bat, too. But just the injury is scare teams.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see him more in the $50, $60 million range.
If what Bob Nightingale says is accurate, and there's no reason to believe that it's not, do you think, you know, kicking the tires on a guy like A.J. Pollock, after what we saw in free agency last year, teams were very cautious.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's a guy that could fall through the cracks and come back on that short-term one-year deal?
Yes, I do.
It's impossible for Corbin to do that, and you brought that up, and I agree with you. And if the Phillies are in the – apparently the Phillies have a printing press, and they're just printing money, and they're going to throw it at everybody this offseason.
Machado.
He's gone.
Bryce Harper.
He's gone.
Yeah, he is gone.
But A.J. Pollock, when you hear phrases like that and you hear the inklings of, you know, the caution being shown by other teams because of that injury history, that makes you think a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe he's not done here.
Well,
because I think the Diamondbacks, knowing all the great qualities of A.J. Pollock and weighing those injury factors, would probably have a better case to bring him back than any other team would be to sign him.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right about that. And you've heard A.J. Pollock talk about the Valley. And when he does, he goes to a level beyond everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about how much he loves it here, how he respects the coaching. He's talking like a guy who, if he had his druthers, would stay in Arizona to play baseball. I could see that happening. I could see this team trying to purge themselves of Zach Greinke, trading Paul Goldschmidt reluctantly because it's the business decision they have to make. Losing Patrick Corbin, probably maybe not even meeting Clay Buchholz's price, and then sticking with A.J. Pollock.
Mm-hmm. Just planting the seed. Not saying it's a done deal.
He's not
planting
a bad,
the seed.
Of those four guys, that's the guy
isn't
to give
that
money
weird?
To, though?
Isn't that weird? But the money to A.J. Pollock, I think what Vinny said is accurate. If there's a guy financially who's going to slip through the cracks, it might be A.J. Pollock because of his injury history.
And because just unless your name is Bryce Harper, it feels like they just don't give outfielders that money anymore.
That's
Look
right.
at J.D. Martinez last year.
Yeah. That's right.
That's true.
And if J.D. Martinez struggled, think about this market, the depth of it. I mean, you go through the list of marquee free agents, it's insane the kind of talent that's out there this year.
Join Burns and Gambo starting at 2 p.m. from the Safeway. Hayden and Chaparral in Scottsdale. Francis Ford Coppola Wines will be on site with the guys, giving you the chance to win tickets to the Territorial Cup in Tucson with hotel and cash included. They have also got free bottle engraving for your purchase. Visit the events page at arizonasports.com for more details.
Well, I mean, I don't think there are any moral victories, but at the same time, I think that there are things that you can point at that were positive stuff heading in the right direction, which, again, last week I talked about being able to run the ball effectively and stop the run. Stopping the run was something that I felt like we did a decent job of. There were a few times where they had some big plays and got guys out of gaps in our defense. But for the most part, being able to run the ball effectively was the thing that I was excited about. You know, I felt like David Johnson had his best game and really looked like the David Johnson that we remember from 2016.
Steve Keimon with Doug and Wolf this morning, the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, on taking positives away from the Kansas City game. And it sounds strange to say in a 12-point loss. In which you kind of folded down the stretch. But mm-hmm. there were a lot of positives to take. How they apply those moving forward, that's the challenge for the Arizona Cardinals this week in what is infinitely their most winnable game on the schedule.
Right. Okay, how will their offensive line perform this weekend? I've already anointed that the key to ASU's chances against Oregon. It's even that more against the Raiders because... this Raiders team does not have Khalil Mack, obviously. They do not have a good pass rush. They do not have a lot of good of anything, all right? And this offensive line has got to let Josh Rosen play on the field the way he can play the game between the years. Got to give him time. Got to give him time. They're blessed with a quarterback who is very, very tough, who has taken a lot of hits in college, who has taken a lot of hits in his young pro career and stays firm. He even said that it's a point of pride to him that I want to be that guy that doesn't become Captain Checkdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to prove I'm a man that way. If you've got a guy willing to commit to standing in the pocket and keeping his eyes downfield, you better block for him. And so it's going to be a test of offensive schematics. Do they X and O their way to better protection? It's going to be sort of a tribute to just the fire inside this team. If they really believe in what Josh Rosen's bringing them, they're going to want to do that. They'll do everything in their power to protect him. You've seen that all over the NFL with offensive linemen who grow to love their young quarterbacks. They'll do anything to protect them. They got to have that mindset. And curious to see if it works. I know that David Johnson's feeling good about things, probably better than he has in a while. I think that's trending in the right direction. And I think this football team has a chance to really sell this narrative that, okay, the problems have been identified and some have been corrected. Some will be corrected. We are on the right path now. Clearly, Robert Kmedici is not part of that path. Part of the reason that the Cardinals have done better stopping the run is that he's no longer on the field that much. And it's a shame that that guy with that talent can tease people the way he does. I mean, I've heard Wolf salivate over this guy's potential for 3 years now. And people who know what a dominant, nasty defensive lineman looks like and can be, those are the ones who are most disappointed in Robert Kmedici. So I think they know that he's not part of the solution. Buda Baker is. Is Patrick Peterson? We'll find out. There's a lot on the line here. There really, really is. And the decision to either unplug a coach after 1 year, it sounds harsh, but not when you've already done it to the offensive coordinator, you know, X amount of games into a season.
Yeah. I mean, the Robert Kmedici thing is interesting. Part of that path is the phrase that you used. It seems like they finally reached that point with Robert Kmedici of just officially being soured. Excuse me.
Yeah, no worries.
I hate to pour salt in the wounds, but this was brought to my attention. I was reminded of this earlier this week. Robert Kmedici in 2016 went number 29 in the draft. You know who went eight spots later at the 37th overall in the second round?
Who?
Chris Jones.
Oh, come on. Come on. That's depressing.
So, you know, we're talking about what to expect from the Cardinals the rest of the year. And when you talk in those terms, this is an important game for them against a bad opponent, a winnable game. Steve Keim was asked that very question. What do you want to see the rest of the way from this team that he is ultimately the architect of?
Well, you know, I think, Wolf, aside from a roster standpoint, you know, we're seeing a lot of rookies play, I think that'll continue. And some of the guys that we brought in, you know, that come off the street, and we've done a lot of that over the last several years, and just to see where some of those guys are at. Some of them will be guys that will be back on our roster next year, and there'll be some players that aren't. And I want to see some of these guys, you know, really take one step forward in terms of having this opportunity. You know, again, that's what we sell to these players when they come in for workouts or visits. You know, really, this is another opportunity for you, and take advantage of it.
I mean, when you really break it down and you parse what he said, or not even just soak in what he said, the level of disappointment at this point is immense. You're basically reduced to auditioning.
Yeah.
For the rest of season.
It is. It's very, very true. And I think that, again, if you're going to create like a pyramid of logic about what is really important going forward, clearly who's going to be here next year and who's not, but the development of Josh Rosen is paramount. So everything has to be looked through that. So the outcomes of these games, I would suggest, are largely secondary, except this one feels different. This one feels like, okay, if you've really laid a foundation, if you've stabilized the problem, you'll prove it against the Raiders. You'll prove it against a really bad team. Problem is a lot of times these NFL games don't go the way you planned, and a lot of times you don't, the great teams on your schedule don't look as good as you feared, and the bad teams are a lot better than you thought, and that's why the Cardinals better bring everything they have in terms of focus to that field on Sunday.
Well, the funny thing is as bad as the Raiders are and have been, they're looking at this game the same way.
Yeah.
Well, it's a soft spot in the schedule. This can make people feel better about this process that's going on under John Gruden.
Yeah.
We should be able to beat the Arizona Cardinals. There's a lot of that thought going on. So to your point, yeah, it's that feeling on both sidelines. Not a great game, but a very intriguing game, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it's intriguing, and it has real consequences to it. You know, think about if they win and they beat the Raiders, I don't think any of us are going to be doing cartwheels unless it's a vintage performance, 35-7, something like that. But Lord help them if they lose.
But even that, a vintage performance would be one with an asterisk.
The Raiders.
Yeah.
The Raiders.
All right, coming up.
Vinny, the autumn wind is a pirate, man. Do you know that?
Yes, it is.
I'm sorry, man. I should know better with your state to interrupt you when you get some momentum going. Yeah.
Well, now I got to start over.
Sorry, bud.
I don't know what I'm going to say. Coming up next, I'm going to shut my microphone off and cough violently, and then we're going to talk about some NFL. Next, it'll be a miracle if I get through this show. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM. The autumn wind is a pirate, right?
Bickley and Murata. Hash marks.
Yeah, here locally, we're wondering about the warmth of the seat for Steve Wilks in year one.
Yeah.
And it's fair to wonder. I mean, he is a first-year coach. It hasn't gone well to this point. There's nobody wondering about the warmth of Mike McCarthy's seat in Green Bay.
Oh, boy.
It's hot.
Yeah.
His butt is burned.
Yeah,
after that loss last night to the Seattle Seahawks, a game which, I mean, if you watch the game, it was strange because it felt like it should have been an easily winnable game for Green Bay, especially with the way it started. But once they scored those two touchdowns in the first quarter, it's kind of foot off the gas approach. Just a strange, weird feel to that game all night long.
Well, Mike McCarthy has been a fixture in Wisconsin for a long time. And the Packers are kind of now in that realm with the Pittsburgh Steelers, where they see the value in having stability of leadership. And Mike McCarthy's been there quite a while. He's butted heads with Aaron Rodgers frequently. This is the gig is up for Mike McCarthy. And I think the play that's going to turn it all for him is a 4th-and-2 last night in the fourth quarter. If you don't trust Aaron Rodgers to get you a 4th-and-2, what are you doing?
Yeah. And now it was affected by the one timeout. But the third down throw, I agree with you. The decision to punt there was ridiculous.
Yeah.
The third down throw might have been worse. That was the most unlike Aaron Rodgers throw I think I've ever seen.
I know that, but do you have any doubt that on 4th and 2 he would have converted that? Because I don't. I mean, I've seen too much.
I mean, there's an element of doubt, but I'm going to roll with it.
I'd roll with it too, especially when you had a defense that had given up 147 yards on the Seahawks' previous two possessions. So they punt the ball away, and Seattle just runs it down their throat.
Which they did all game.
Goodbye, good night, game over. You were able to watch this game with Packers fans. I want to hear more about this experience. Did you come away with any cultural revelations?
Yeah, those people like cheese and beer.
What's wrong with that?
But I can't imagine why you're congested today after a night of cheese and beer.
Yeah,
I'm not congested because of cheese. I didn't eat the cheese. I had some beer.
Yeah, but
no, I thought I had dodged the bullet on this whole sickness thing that's going by.
Uh-huh.
Because I woke up last Saturday with a sore throat, and then it just kind of went away. And I'm like, oh, cool. Passed me by.
I just, look, when your season is on the line, when your job might be on the line, and it's 4th and 2, and you're on the road, and there's 4 minutes left to go in the game, and you've got Aaron Rodgers, and you punt the football. He's not getting over this. And I think that you talk about it being time. It's time now in Green Bay for a change, because Aaron Rodgers, you can tell he's getting very, very annoyed with all of this. He's been very annoyed for a couple of years running now, because I won't call him Dan Marino, because Dan Marino did not win a Super Bowl. But I think you're right. I think it's Aaron Rodgers just is like, this is laughable. Everyone thinks I'm one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and I got this one ring.
Yeah,
I got as many as Brett Favre.
He's got as many as Joe Flacco.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
as many as Trent Dilfer.
Them's fighting words. Here's Mike McCarthy after the game about the rest of the Packers season, which I said yesterday, and I feel this too, was kind of a unofficial playoff elimination game. Here's McCarthy.
We have 5 losses, and we have 1 on the road yet. So, I wouldn't say there's a lot of football left. But there's enough football. You know, that's basically what I told the football team. So there's enough football left, and you know, like you always do, you come out of these Thursday night games. We need to get healthy and get ready. We got a big one next week up in Minnesota. So everything's in front of us.
Yeah, the Packers, you heard McCarthy say it, they haven't won on the road yet. A couple plays, I mean, if Fuller from Chicago catches a pass on opening night, they probably have another loss. I mean, it's been a disappointing season for the Packers, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. I'm reading it right now. They've got a 30% chance left to make the playoffs. That's higher than I thought it was going to be. But then again, there's a lot of season left. But it just feels like it's broken. It feels like they need a new voice and a new leadership in there. You can't put anything past Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, my team, it's broken.
Did you see that one throw he made last night? Threw the ball 60 yards in the air under pressure and just dropped it in the guy's breadbasket.
To a tight end I've never heard of before.
Look, it's we saw him do it at State Farm Stadium a couple of times. The guy, his talent at that position is just insane, and it's such a waste that he doesn't have a system that helps him flourish. So were the Cheeseheads bummed out by the end of this thing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Swearing, obviously, quite a bit.
Yes. And not, like, I think I thought one Seahawks fan there. I mean, this was a Packers establishment.
Yeah.
Very clearly marked that way.
Was it really?
And a time-honored one, too.
Really?
And I don't, I don't get a chance to watch games among the fan base of any team. It was interesting. Very communal. Kind of a cool thing. Kind of, you know, rekindled. It rekindles, in a way, your fandom. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to wear cheese on my head anytime soon, but it was a cool experience. Staying in the division, Matt Patricia, we're talking about hot seats. Matt Patricia's seat is hot, even though he's a first-year head coach in Detroit. This photo went viral of Detroit practicing in the snow with Matt Patricia out there wearing shorts.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And now he's asking, you know, he's having to defend the decision. Some members of the media, this is according to NFL.com, questioned why the Lions would practice outside when considering the team host the Carolina Panthers for an indoor game in Week 11 and potentially risk injury in the elements. Patricia came ready Friday with a prepared statement backing his decision. Quote, first, we'll always practice and train in a manner that looks out for our players' ability to prepare each week for our opponent while also taking care of them, including all parameters to the overall health and safety of our team. It's always beneficial to our players. It's a great teaching and learning environment.
Oh, it's not. No, it's not.
That's stupid. You're not New England anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, your decisions that may seem weird from the outside are no longer soothed over by the fact that you're a giant winning machine. You're in Detroit. Make sound decisions that benefit your football team that lead to wins. This is just stupid.
Well, there's so much weirdness about that guy. I mean, he's let his own appearance become even more disheveled. The beard's thicker. All that stuff.
He's got great posture, though.
And yet he's ridiculing reporters for their enthusiasm and their lack of posture. Yeah. Very early on, Lions players were like, ew. So this is a guy, if you're to believe Josh Weinfuss about Steve Wilks, that he still has the faith of the players and the love of some players, I don't think you can say the same thing about Matt Patricia in Detroit. Now, it's not important. You can be a head coach and be a jerk face and have your players hate you, and it's all good. As long as you win. Yeah. Bill Belichick's been doing that a long time. But
nobody likes a losing jerk face.
Exactly. Well said.
That same piece, by the way, also had Matt Patricia in the below expectations category, along with Pat Shurmur, Steve Wilks, and John Gruden. Mike Rothstein, of ESPN.com. What he needs to do better? There's a reasonable amount here, which should be expected when a coach is under 500 after taking over a team that was over 500 the past two seasons. Consistency has been a major issue for the Lions in every facet of the game. That starts with coaching, something Patricia wholly admits.
Can I say the worst thing about Matt Patricia? He looks like the gruffest guy in the world, right?
Yeah.
Like he should talk, I'm going to get you, Popeye, like that. But this is how he actually talks.
Don't tease us.
Good.
Do me a favor. Just kind of sit up and just like have a
real
respect
voice
for the process. Every day you come in and ask me questions and you just kind of like, well, it's okay.
He will not
get up.
He's gonna have to
slouching.
So when they reboot the Popeye movie, you're gonna say he's gonna have to visit a speech coach to get that whole.
That
thing
is
down.
So weird. I wonder who that could have been in the Detroit media that aggravated him so much. That's such a weird thing for a first year head coach to do. There's so much arrogance in that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
To criticize somebody else's style. Maybe he's got scoliosis or something. Maybe his back hurts. Maybe he's got a slipped disc.
Well done.
Thank you. Very, very careful with that phrase.
All right, coming up, as another factor contributing to Bickley's enthusiasm about Tiger versus Phil, maybe. We'll get into it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley.
Do you have hair coming out of your ears?
Vince Murata.
I'm obsessed with ear hair.
Bickley and Murata.
That's cool. You know, I get weird like that.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Full admission.
Yeah?
That rejoinder made me check my ear.
Really?
Yeah. I got one. I'm a little delirious. I apologize. I asked the question, anybody ever died on the air while doing a show?
Oh, come on.
Man,
you're
feel horrible.
That, really?
Oh.
Didn't the Phillies announcer die, like, during pregame?
Yeah.
Did he really?
I think so. If I could go down like Harry Callis, that would be fitting.
It's not a bad way to go.
No.
Nobody would ever forget it.
Doing what you love.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be you.
No, I was out on Tuesday, not for sickness, but I was driving around listening to you and Tim Ring, and thanks again to Tim Ring for filling in, talking about the Tiger versus Phil pay-per-view Black Friday event.
Yeah.
And the price has been lowered, so now it's in your price range. And now, did you see this report that Charles Barkley and Samuel L. Jackson have joined the broadcast?
Get
I don't know if
here.
It's going to be just a long Capital
serious?
One commercial.
Is that not a surefire sign that sales for this thing are in the tank?
Yeah, might be.
That's terrible.
Oh, to Jarrett.
Turner has unveiled its plan.
My impression. That's a bad, bad impression.
That's terrible.
It's not your worst.
Ew. Oof.
Turner has unveiled its plans for coverage of Tiger Woods' pay-per-view match with Phil Mickelson. Adam Lefko will host a star-studded pre-match show beginning 1 hour before the players tee off. His panel of experts will include golfer Pat Perez, former Sun Devil, NBA legend and legendarily bad golfer Charles Barkley, and Oscar nominee Samuel L. Jackson. Match itself will feature a high-profile broadcast team. Ernie Johnson will call the play-by-play. He'll be joined by Peter Jacobson, Darren Clark, Shane Bacon, and Natalie Gulbis will serve as course reporters. Does this increase your interest level, or does it affect it at all?
I'd be lying if I said it didn't. I'll tell you what really does increase my interest level. Did you see the Inside the NBA interview that Ernie Johnson had with Tiger Woods?
I did not.
You did not, huh?
No.
Well, Tiger
did Ernie get Tiger to say anything interesting?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
He said about being inside of Phil Mickelson's head, if he's going to try to get into his head before or during the match. Tiger Woods said, quote, "I've been in his head for 20 years. Now that's quality trash talk right there. Nah?
I mean, it's good for Tiger.
You don't know anything about the background between these two guys and how much they once really hated each other.
Was it you talking about it on Tuesday about the date that falls on the calendar is the 9-year anniversary of Tiger's eventful Black Friday at home with Thielen?
Tim Dahlberg of the Associated Press said, "I wonder if Phil Mickelson, in his very cheeky way, will remind Tiger that their tee time on that date in Vegas will be the 9-year anniversary of the day that he backed into a fire hydrant and took a 9-iron to his windshield."
Yeah. I mean, that's Phil's pat answer right there.
Yeah.
Do you think Phil, is he still beloved by ASU fans around here?
Yes.
He's a made man.
Yeah.
That's what you call him.
I heard you turn on him the other day, though.
I did, and I'm sorry, I'm just trying to be honest. I'll tell you, just my honest feelings, I think Phil's gotten goofy. Phil was an icon of golf, in my opinion, okay? Mm-hmm. I looked at him as, there's Mount Rushmore of golf, I might put him on it. I really might. But that hitting the putt while it was still rolling down the hill in a major is so much more egregious than you guys understand, because you're not golfers. And then just the dancing routine and just the goofiness, and it's just, no, I don't like that. I want a serious competitor. I love that he has fun. I love everything that he does for people. I'm not trying to be the get off my lawn guy, but he just
you
got to respect the game more if you're Phil freaking Mickelson.
The reason I brought that up is because there's news he's going to an ASU game, right?
Yeah, he's going when ASU plays in Vegas. When is that? Early next week?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they play Mississippi State or something like that.
I think so.
Phil Mickelson is going to be courtside. I think it's Monday, maybe. And as a result, I'm sure he's going to be there to pimp the event.
Right. But do you think he's going to be wearing, like, ASU stuff? Like, do you think his connection to ASU actually benefits the school at all?
Oh, of course it does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course it does.
Yeah.
I hate him then.
Well, whatever. I do feel myself starting to get suckered into this. I do.
And I'm sure when we come back after Thanksgiving on that Monday.
I mean, I can write it off my taxes, right?
Yeah.
It's research.
It's $20. Big deal.
It's
I'm sure you'll have a full recap. I'll sum it up this way. I think going shopping on Black Friday is about the dumbest and worst thing a human being can do.
Amen.
I will do that before I watch that stupid golf event.
Yeah. And the only thing more stupid is going Black Friday shopping on Thursday night of Thanksgiving, which is a thing that started even last year.
Hey, thanks for dinner. I got to take off.
I got to go.
There's a television on sale.
Yeah. Got to go. The line's forming. I got to get out of here.
I've had family members do that in the past.
That just defiles Thanksgiving.
The only
you can make an argument that football does, but at least it keeps you in the house with your family.
The only line I get on Thursday night that defiles Thanksgiving is the one to the toilet.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, come on, Jared.
Did you see the Ed Oliver Major Applewhite dust up last night?
Oh, my goodness, I did. I've got so much thoughts on this stuff. It's unbelievable.
Ed Oliver is going to be one of the top draft picks. Could be an Arizona Cardinal next year. But defensive tackle for the University of Houston. They're playing last night, except he wasn't playing. He's missed the last few games with an injury. So he's on the sideline, and he's wearing a coat that says Houston football. Black coat. But apparently there's a rule that players can only wear that coat on the sideline if they're playing.
Uh-huh.
So Major Applewhite, the head coach, actually goes over to Ed Oliver and says, you got to take the jacket off, and starts physically taking the jacket off of him.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it.
Why?
I saw the whole thing.
Is that one of the strangest things you've ever seen on a sideline? It was up there for me. And well, then Ed Oliver got really mad.
Well, again, he's got every right to get mad, because the head coach isn't talking about a jacket. He's saying to the kid, you can play and you're not. You could be on this field and you're nursing this injury for your own gain. To which Ed Oliver should have looked at him and said, yeah, what's your problem with that? How much you paying me, coach?
Yeah. Major Applewhite said, quote, there's a rule for our team. Everybody follows the rule. I asked him to follow the rule. He was upset about it, and I get it. We deal with these types of situations all the time. This is something we're going to learn from and grow from. Hey, I mean, I know it's not a Power 5 program. It's a pretty successful program at Houston. Get more damn jackets, Major.
Yeah. Listen.
It's cold outside.
But on top of that, it's really not even about the jacket. He's trying to emasculate this kid in front of the rest of his team to send him a message that you're with us, but you're not part of us because you won't play. I'm sorry. There was a time when I would be all over a player like this, but knowing what you know now about the profits that schools make and the money they make and what football players give and the kind of garbage nonsense they put up with from some of these college coaches, good for Ed Oliver.
Yeah.
Protect yourself.
He's played his last down at Houston.
And look, we will be having the same conversation with N'Keal Harry, I guarantee it. I guarantee it.
Yeah, if the Sun Devils fall short of the goal to get to the Pac-12 South Championship game. And even if he does play in that game, if that is a reality, depending on where they go for a bowl game, that's going to be a storyline.
Oh, yeah.
And can't say that you blame him.
If they play in the Icky Pickett's Widget Bowl, he's not playing.
Is that a real bowl?
No, it's not.
Did you? Here's a sign, by the way.
Sounds like one of my NFL headlines.
Yeah. If you wanted more proof that there's too many bowl games, there's a new one this year called the Myrtle Beach Bowl that's going to be played in South Carolina.
Yeah.
They couldn't get the website domain because MyrtleBeachBowl.com belongs to an actual bowling alley in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Couldn't they pay the bowling alley for the website and give it back to them after the bowl is over?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bowl game. It's going to be around for 2 years. Do you really want to make that investment?
Right, right. Well, but does a bowling alley really need an online presence?
Sure. I want to know how much my shoes are going to cost. We're halfway through on this Football Friday. The Bickley Blast is straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.